Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition, the happier happy hour. Dominic, I'm happy to welcome back happier something. Jim Santel, how you doing, man? Host of Morning Cannolis.
And I am happy to be with all of you as well. Happiness is the word of the afternoon.
Well, I didn't mean to step on you, Jim. More accurately, you stepped on me, but you are the host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Jim, we appreciate you coming around. Former U.S. attorney, something of our favored legal eagle. And I want to start with some breaking news as we turn the hour here. Lindsey Graham is going to be forced to testify in the Fulton County case in Georgia. And this is the clearest evidence that we've seen in the public record of not just Donald Trump wading in, but apparently Lindsey Graham seeking to pressure state officials for the benefit of, his buddy. Your opinion of this ruling, sir?
Absolutely. It is significant, and it is more than just a tea leaf. This is confirmation that Fannie Willis, who is the DA there in Fulton County, who's been investigating the 11,780 votes for Mark, by the former president of the Secretary of State there, investigating beyond just that call. That's where this all started, the attempt to try to find those votes, if you will, asked by the former president. She has plainly expanded this beyond just Donald Trump and beyond that call. We've known that for some time based upon the nature of the subpoenas that she has issued, the scope of the special grand jury investigation there. But this reconfirms that she's looking beyond that. She's talking about all kinds of, which in fact, the election there in Georgia could have been undermined by a number of people and not just the president of the United States of America. She's asking Lindsey Graham, what did you know about this? What did you do? What did you say? What kind of encouragement did you give to the president? What other things might you have done independent of the president to try to affect the Georgia election? It is broad in scope. A lot of people talk about a RICO charge coming up. That certainly is in the possible realm of options that she's got.
Why a RICO charge, counselor? That's like organized crime terminology. What's that mean to the layperson?
Sure. And it does. It was written for organized crime, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's where RICO comes from. You look at those words and you think, okay, a racketeering is one thing, but corrupt organizations, corruption, the notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime, has many tendrils to it, many different aspects of it, accomplishing this illegal criminal end, lots of different facets to it. That's not an especially sophisticated legal definition, but it's one that really pretty much defines the ways in which RICO cases are presented. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy, a larger group of people doing things toward this illegal end.
Jim, we saw another criminal accusation made against the former president by a federal judge. Now, David Clark has made a similar accusation prior in his rulings on Eastman.
David Carter. Judge David Carter, yes.
Carter, I'm sorry. Clark.
and Mr. Clark has got his own problems, as we know.
Clark, but let's talk about this statement, the crime fraud exemption. We've talked about that before, Counselor. Jim, tell us why this ruling in California, why is this important, and could this affect other trials that Trump's involved in?
Absolutely. And so this could impact not just state prosecutions of the sort that we just chatted about, could be used in federal cases as well. What's this all about? It again, emails between Eastman, perhaps others, but with respect to the president's counsel and advice. You might think, well, gee, that sounds like attorney-client privilege, and it may well be. What the finding is and why this is so significant, not just superficially, but also legally, is a finding that these particular communications are not protected by the privilege that goes between an attorney and her or his client. The crime fraud exception basically says that if your communications in that otherwise protected realm, in that exchange with your attorney, are about crimes, if you're talking about things that are not related to representation, but move beyond that to criminal activity, what are you going to do? What am I going to do? The attorney himself, herself is involved in those conversations to accomplish a crime or even to talk about doing a crime. That's the crime fraud exception to the privilege that otherwise would attach. Again, significant because you've got a judge once again saying, I've looked at these things. I've seen not only the exchange between the attorney and his client, but also I find that their communications are about criminal conduct, criminal activity, proposing it, talking about it. And that again brings it outside of the privilege and makes it available for use in investigations. And perhaps one day, perhaps to your delight, Mike, one day a trial in a federal and state court.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us. All right, so this is the same judge, David Carter, who said months ago that he thought that there may be some crime here. Now he has released, what, I think about 4 out of over 500 emails that are in dispute claiming this is crime fraud exception on those particular emails. Now, while certainly the judgment of Mr. Carter it goes a long way, that doesn't mean automatically there's an indictment, right? So can, once these emails are released, can those be picked up then? How does the process work? They'll get picked up perhaps by other people who are, you know, involved in different lawsuits. Where does it go from here, Jim? How does this translate from this one judge's statements and the release of these emails to using that as tangible evidence of a crime in other courts?
It is a great question. It's a practical question, right? Everybody's asking. Now, out in the public domain, recall again that what Judge Carter said, the things you're appropriately invoking, he looked at all this previously and said to us, it's very clear to him in a civil case, interestingly, that the former president engaged in criminal conduct, criminal conspiracy to undermine the election, to defraud the government, if you will. He made that finding, admittedly, in a civil case. It doesn't have much meaning beyond that because it's inside a civil case. Doesn't mean that anybody is indicted. You're absolutely right. Nor does this today mean that anybody is indicted. But to answer your very important and practical question going forward, the fact that he has now said that these particular exchanges, these emails, are not protected, that they can and should be used out there, means that if Fannie Willis wants to pick them up, if there are federal officers out there, assistant U.S. attorneys, Department of Justice wants to pick them up, they can do so, at least with the imprimatur of this particular judge. Not to say that Donald Trump and his attorneys won't continue to fight this fight in another forum, maybe in another criminal forum, but the fact is that they can now be used because the judge has effectively released them. It's kind of the same kind of thing that Judge Deary's doing with respect in South Florida and having some real problems with the president's position there as well, may well say once again, yes, the Department of Justice can look at those too. So you've got this release. It can, in fact, be used. Yeah, you've got to make the transfers properly between agency and agency, but that's not difficult to accomplish.
Practically speaking, then, do you think the Fulton County District Attorney, this is something that she will want to jump on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Difficult to imagine that if she doesn't have them already, that she will not be, difficult to imagine she will not be getting them, double negative there. She will be getting those. Whether they're specifically relevant to her case, again, focused upon Georgia, that's an assessment that she and the special grand jury will make. But again, it's the thing that prosecutors always do before you charge anything, which is look at the entire universe. No surprises down the road. I want to see what everything is out there. And now she's got a little bit more in her quiver if, in fact, she decides to seek an indictment.
Jim, my impression, Donald Trump has a tell. He always puts out some sort of disclaimer. Hey, the BS I'm about to give you, I don't know if it's really true or not. He did it on his financials and apparently did it in this case. It's one thing to say something to the United States citizens. It's another thing to file a knowingly false statement in the court of law. Is there any redress for that one particular action, Jim?
Sure. And so, again, you're signing something. You got exactly right. If I say something, even on this fine radio program, that is untrue, well, probably difficult to make me criminally liable.
First Amendment, baby.
There you go. That's exactly it. It's a broad, broad privilege. But even it is not unconditional. But when you move beyond that and you go into court, as people like Rudy Giuliani and others have discovered, when you sign off on things and you are making a statement, as a litigant, as an attorney, that this is true, especially significant as we're finding out that there was an attempt to try to stop him from doing that, right? Eastman came forward and said, wait, we can't have this going forward. President Trump did it anyway. That's a false statement on the court. That's fraud to the court. The court can take some action, can find someone in contempt if they find that there is indeed an intent to defraud the court. And beyond that, could be the subject of, again, other civil and criminal investigations of the extent to which you intended to accomplish something of a bad nature, whatever, however that may be described. So the notion, when you file something, when I sign something in court, I'm telling the judge, the best of my belief, this is true. And here, in fact, there is background information to suggest Donald Trump knew well at the time that what he was signing was not true.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Finest of guests, he is our good friend, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, and more importantly, host of Morning Cannolis on Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network. Find the local listings, but it plays out 9 to 11. Just turn on the radio or get the Civic Media app. Jim, we're going to ask you to stick around. And I'm wondering, how quickly will Steve Bannon's ass end up in jail? Because I understand the same committee that subpoenaed him subpoenaed the former president, and what's good for Bannon should be good for for Trump, right? So what will your prediction, counselor, be for, you know, Bannon's jail time? Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates, more James Santel, more of Dom's porn stash on the other side.
Enrico Palazzo!
Rico. Yeah, that's it. It's go time.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at The Devil's Advocates. And, of course, go to civicmedia.us and look for us on podcasts for interviews and other podcasts.
Dominic, we've got the finest of guests. He is James Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannoli Saturday mornings right here on Civic Media 9 to 11. And, Jim, I don't know if we told you, but we're having a little soiree at the Atomic Koi in Madison on Tuesday. Another victory over the man party, sir.
Woo-hoo!
I almost mischaracterized you as our counsel in that case. You are not, but you always offer fine punditry and counseling here on the air. Jim, I got a few questions. It's my turn, Dominic. Want to ask you about the probable recount in Wisconsin. We know that the insurrectionist, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, whether it's a second, a minute, or an hour, Ron has conspiracy blood on his hands. And I would say above and beyond that, he rolled out a website today, you know, report your election conspiracies here. Now, I think Dom was probably amongst the first to point out the fact that he participated in a little election fraud, or at least was more than willing to. But the probability of a recount, he's gearing up. He's hired Jim Troupas. Trump obviously used Troupas to recount in Dane and Milwaukee counties here in Wisconsin, Jim. Our pal, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, your friend as well, I suspect, Maggie Dawn, is getting ready for a recount. She tells us it's coming in all probability, the closeness of the anticipated outcome. Jim, what's your thoughts on A, an insurrectionist on the ballot, and B, him gathering resources for an anticipated recount, despite the fact we don't even know who the people are voting for yet?
Right. It's troubling in so many ways. And once again, you have to believe that not only the rollout of this particular website, all of this intended for one purpose that we have chatted about before, which is not legal. It's not legal in the sense of a legal process. It's not meant to promote voting and understanding of civics. It's simply meant to suggest to the American public that none of this is to be believed, and that whatever happens in 20 days from now is not real. If in fact it goes well for him, badly for him, it's to sow discontent. That's what this is really about. Having said that, it is a part of our recent national history, our recent state history, as Maggie Dawn and others have said, that you can in fact invoke the regular processes of state law, and you can get recounts under appropriate circumstances. And some of them are automatic, some of them can be requested. I would place an awful lot of weight in what Maggie says as a corporation counsel for Milwaukee County. That's not a position that I am in, but if she is seeing the tea leaves again, that indicates that this is where we're headed, it may well be. It may well be, and it may well be appropriate if in fact it is that razor thin. But again, to wed that notion of a recount to the the reason for a recount is to get it right, correct? It's to ensure that the right person is elected. If that is the purpose, then we've got legitimacy here. If, as the senior senator seems to suggest, what we're really doing here is sowing conspiracies, we are promoting things that plainly did not happen, that's an inappropriate use of this. It's an inappropriate stirring up of the electorate before this happens. And once again, shame on him. And again, embarrassing that he does that kind of thing as a senator of the United States.
Jim Santel, our fine guest. Jim, the former president was deposed under oath, and that's a rarity. E. Jean Carroll, a rape accuser, the actual case, a defamation case, because Trump has denied publicly that he raped her and said, you know, look at her, I guess there were specific things. I don't want to get it wrong, but she sued for defamation. This is dragged through the courts. I believe Bill Barr, in this case, tried to substitute the United States for Donald Trump, private citizen, because this happened long before the presidency. We've worked that out through the courts, and now Trump has been deposed. Will we, the American public, ever see the deposition testimony?
It is entirely possible. Again, so some background on this as well. I've got the specific quotes. When he was in office, which is significant, the former president says about Jean Carroll, she'd written a book, excerpt from Beers in a New York magazine, again, accusations that he raped her in this Bergdorf Goodman dressing room back in the mid-1990s. Trump says when he's in office as the president that she is totally lying and that she was not his type. I'm just going to leave the outrage of those statements alone right now. She turns around and she files this defamation suit for those statements again. He's making reference to things that happened long before his presidency, have, from the view of many people, nothing to do with the presidency itself. Much to the surprise, as you just indicated, Mike, the Department of Justice, for which I formerly worked, the former attorney general says, you know what? He did that in the scope of his employment. That is the statements that he made about E. Jean Carroll and the scope of his employment as an employee, the president of the United States of America. All of us, I think all of us who did prior civil litigation work, looked at that and said, what? How can that be scope of your proper official employment? That issue actually is still up before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. And so that issue is pending. The reason it's significant is if Donald Trump is substituted out, United States is substituted in under the Federal Tort Claims Act. You can't go after the United States and the whole case goes away. It's significant that the trial judge says, while that's going on, I'm going to let this deposition go on over the protests of Donald Trump's attorneys. And yes, indeed, we won't see that deposition transcript soon, but it's entirely possible that if this trial goes ahead, if the Second Circuit permits this case again to go ahead against Donald Trump, and this case goes in front of a trial jury in New York, there could be excerpts from that deposition. More significantly, testimony about what did and did not happen back in the 1990s, and about all of this could indeed come flushing out.
Jim Santel, E. Jean Carroll claimed she's got a little blue dress that has DNA from the former president from his act of non-consensual sex, rape. That would certainly play out in court, would it not? And could they collect a sample from him?
Absolutely. All of it relevant, because even though it's a defamation lawsuit, that is things that he said about her that were not true, what was true? What is true and what's not true? And so things like dresses, things like DNA, things like statements made, other people who may have been in the store at the time, all of that comes in to establish the falsity of what he said and thus the defamation when he simply happened to be the president of the United States of America.
Jim, too soon to say goodbye, man. You got a few, like 10, 12 more minutes for us?
Absolutely. Always for you. A happy day.
It's a happier happy hour with more Jim Santel and more Devil's Advocates and more of you listening.
I want the truth.
It isn't truth. Truth isn't truth.
Sixty percent of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
You know, if there are a few bow chicka bow bows in there, I thought that was for you, Dom. And
yeah,
your
baby.
Porn stash.
I can get my robe back on.
Dominic, 24 hours from now, we've just confirmed a fine guest. Congressional candidate Mike Van Summeren. He is Fitzgerald's opponent in the 5th CD in the great state of Wisconsin. Also, 3rd CD Democrat Brad Paff joining us 4:30 tomorrow on the big show.
So we're loaded up for tomorrow.
Get into some of the congressional races happening in the big state of Wisconsin. But today's big show, it's still a big show. And James Santel, still the finest of guests. He is the host of Morning Cannolis. He's a friend of ours, a fine former U.S. attorney and still an attorney at law, I suspect. Jim, thanks for sticking around, man. And, you know, next time we see you, you owe me some cannolis. But anyways.
I do. Long overdue.
Not really. I'm, you know, of all the Italian morning pastries, I'm not a huge cannoli guy. I hate to admit it, but.
Oh, blasphemy.
I know. I'll keep it to myself. I apologize. For just a moment, let's talk about the U.S. Supreme Court in a lawsuit originating from the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They've been, what? There's a lawsuit. They ran it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court because they wanted to say in whether or not student loan borrowers got some sort of debt relief from that tyrant fiating Joe Biden. How dare he try to offer this relief? And they, of course, show the true colors of their party. They, of course, are the law firm of the right here in the state of Wisconsin. But Amy Coney Barrett, in something of a shocker to yours truly, denied Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and effectively sent it back down where the lower courts had said, you don't have standing.
And good for her to do so. Again, Amy Coney Barrett, for what it is worth, which is a lot. She is the designated circuit justice for the Seventh Circuit. That's where we are, Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois. That's why she makes that initial call, if you will, about how these things happen. Just like we had another justice with respect to the Mar-a-Lago matter, made an initial call there about a week or so ago, having to do with those documents. Here, what she says is stay in the lower courts. No reason to take a look at this. And like the other disposition by the Supreme Court and in the Mar-a-Lago case, the fact that this is done summarily is a signal. Not only is it a signal about the substance of this, that she feels there is no standing, but the quickness and the brevity. It's done basically saying, we're not taking this. Don't bring this back to us. That is also a signal about the Supreme Court's, in this case, appropriate disposition of this particular claim. And again, one wonders aloud if the attorneys who are advancing this know that from the start and do this for the very reason that we talked about before, which is just simply to send that message out there inappropriately to the American public that there's a claim here and it gets to the Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court is taking a look at it, there must be some validity to it. There is not. It's once again mechanisms that can be used, that are available to litigants and to attorneys to use inside the judicial system. Nonetheless, I would say an abuse of doing that when you know that there's no there. Amy Coney Barrett says that and brings us to, thankfully, a quick, speedy, and dispositive end.
So do you think that's the last word, Jim?
Well, probably not. We know that we are a country of litigants, and we know that whether it's that law firm, other law firms, we have seen in many, many ways the ways in which the law can be used for good, but also can be used abusively. And when always things, when you think about the great number of cases pending before the United States Supreme Court, even this term, again, having all kinds of very important things, the environment, gerrymandering, this independent state legislature doctrine, all kinds of things, Native American Indian children, all kinds of things that are truly important issues the court should be focusing on. And is, yes, it may not have taken a lot of time to divert itself into attend to these kinds of things, but we should be bringing to the court those larger issues, commerce clause, all kinds of things out there that the Supreme Court is and should be looking at, not bringing to its attention these matters that are clearly, in this case, but outstanding and, again, a good result from the highest court in the land.
Jim, the legal opinion offered by the Biden administration asserting that the Higher Education Relief Opportunity for Students Act gives the education secretary authority to reduce or eliminate the obligation, that's the specific, that's what the Biden administration is pinning their position on. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the concept here, once again, in terms of checks and balances, is that we've got a legislature that establishes, again, a department and gives it authority to act. The language you just read, that's the key language, Dom. It says, okay, we're going to not defer, but we're going to grant to you as the executive branch, where does that word come from? Executing the law that is passed by the Congress. Here is the commission we're giving you. Here's the power, the authority, do this kind of thing. And so the Biden administration, any administration, entirely appropriate to say, what is the commission? What are our bylaws, basically? Why did you create this department in the first place? This is what we're doing. And that's all we're doing. That's what we're doing. The issue is, again, before the Supreme Court, an environmental case having to do with the Clean Water Act this time, of the EPA. Last year, the EPA with respect to the Clean Air Act. These issues about what the executive branch can and cannot do properly, the Biden administration saying, you told us to do this. You gave us the authority to do it. That's what we're doing, and we're not exceeding that authority. And again, as Amy Coney Barrett says, under these circumstances, again, these particular parties have no standing, but implicit in that is if the Supreme Court really felt that there was an overreach here, there was really a problem with the executive branch doing something far beyond what the Congress had said it could do, you better well believe the Supreme Court would have said, yeah, bring that case here so we can make another statement here. Again, appropriate allocation of responsibility from the Congress to the executive branch to act. That's the reason why the elections, if you don't like it, you elect a new president who has a different Department of Education, and they act under the same law in a way that, in their view, is appropriate.
And given the philosophical leanings of Amy Coney Barrett, one would think that if there was a chance, if there was a chink in the armor, she would have found it, and she declined to allow that to happen. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, sticking around for this segment. All right, let's get to him. You know, originally, Jim, what I wanted to talk to you about, John Durham, man. I mean, he was John appointed Durham by your former boss, Bill Barr, to uncover, as the former twice impeached president of one term president of the United States said, uncover the crime of the century. What, one person pled guilty to a charge and received probation, and two acquittals is what I see from the Durham investigation. And Jim, my understanding from the reporting, Durham allowed the jury to understand perhaps some things that were not necessarily accurate. What's your take, sir?
Yeah, lots of things. You know, it's a good thing. I have many wonderful attorneys in the defense bar. Defense attorneys are no more but no less important than prosecutors are in making certain that justice is done. One of them said to me recently, gee, if the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure permitted defendants to select their assistant U.S. attorney prosecutor, I would select John Durham. saying that tongue-in-cheek, but it really is, seriously, I shouldn't say an embarrassment. It's not a surprise. So what happens here, as you indicated, we've got a former attorney general that says, okay, investigate the investigation, gives me yet another chance here on October 20th to say those words. Yes, the Mueller report, there it is once again, and determine how that investigation came about. The best, as you just indicated, that John Durham comes up with is three prosecutions, Two of them end up in acquittals, fairly summary acquittals by juries on false statement charges. One of them involves a lower plea of guilty. And again, this latest one involving this Igor Danchenko, the only reason Mike is probably upset about it is because it has to do, of course, with the dossier, fairly roundly discredited. But nonetheless, getting back to the larger
issue. I'm not sure it's been discredited.
We'll talk later.
It's seemingly vindicated every time Durham tries to take it to court.
Right. And to that point, lots of things in the indictment here that had nothing to do with the false statements that Igor Danchenko and Nezhel made. When Durham is almost impeaching his own first witness, the FBI agent, on the first day of trial, you know you're in trouble. You should have known that going in. That's not a surprise from the defense case. This was a disaster with a capital D from any prosecutor's viewpoint, from any defense counsel's viewpoint. Certainly an appropriate verdict here. Probably strategically wise for the president attorney general to permit this to go ahead, just so didn't bring this to a conclusion earlier on, so no one could say, gee, you're stopping the investigation of the investigation. But now it is time, Mr. Attorney General, to accept this report from John Durham, if he writes it before the end of the year, and bring this craziness finally to an end so we're no longer going down this road.
Our fine guest, Jim Santel, for a few more minutes. Jim, I don't care about the Durham report. I want to know about the January 6th report from the J6 committee. When are we going to see that, man? We're less than 3 weeks to Election Day. If they want to point out that democracy is on the ballot in the midterms, they need to drop a report in time for Dom to start reading it.
It certainly is that case. Firstly, so that Dom can read it, but secondarily, so that there can be some digesting of it by the American population. We do have, 20 days? That is a possibility that it could still drop. Hopefully, if it does drop before the election, it doesn't drop on November 6th or 7th, although even there would be plenty of headlines. And again, the work, I think, as I've said before, my speculation is the work is 90% done. It's 95% written, a few more things being added on. If it is intended to advise the country of things that are relevant to this election, that is, people who are maintaining that the election was stolen, that we've got voter fraud in this country, is it relevant then for this committee to come forth with that report in the next 20 days? Yes. And so those people who say, well, it's just for political purposes, no, they're making findings that are important to the legitimacy of candidates out there who are saying that January 6th, we've got a party that said that there's a legitimate political discourse. That plainly is not true. If they're making findings about those kinds of things relevant to an election coming up, again, understanding this is not charging anyone with anything. We're not going to be indicting anybody here, but reporting to the American public on what happened. And then probably in that report also making recommendations, as we did in the wake of Watergate, about what legislative changes have to happen. That's the dual purpose behind this commission, this committee, and that's what we look forward to seeing sooner rather than later.
James Santel, our fine guest. Jim, you originate your program, Morning Cannolis, from the Shaw, from the WAUK studios in Waukesha. And the trial is underway right now. Daryl Brooks's trial, he was the alleged murderer. I don't think there's really a question of the facts terribly, but he's on trial and the prosecution has rested and he is without counsel, Jim. And my understanding, me and our new...
Well, he's representing himself. He is his own counsel.
Well, he is without counsel. And as our news director, Terry Bell, and I were listening to earlier testimony today, it is really turning into a circus. How long do you anticipate the judge will allow the defendant to, lead the three-ring circus here, Jim?
It is a problem. And I will tell you that, again, I have not been following some of it, but not nearly as closely as many of your listeners have probably followed it. Certainly a lot of good reporting locally. Obviously, once again, absolute human tragedy all around, start to finish. Only the victims, but also him as well. Engaging in a horrific act, right? And so from the very start, the judge obviously telling him that he's got the right to represent himself. Again, not being in court, I will still tell you that this is a very, very difficult thing to not only to endorse, but to look at an unschooled person and someone who probably also has some significant mental illnesses here and say, yes, you can properly represent yourself. That's a big judgment to make. That's huge. And you can, in fact, compel attorneys at least to be in a standby role. You can deny the request of counsel to withdraw, as difficult as that would be for counsel to continue to engage in those representation relationships. My concern about this, again, from the outside, is that with the circus, as you have described it, an appeals court gets a hold of this and says, you know, at some point, even with someone who's representing themselves, this is too much. He was denied a right to a fair presentation, to confront the witnesses, to make arguments. And for that reason, we may have to overturn this verdict. That's the concern that I have. I hope it doesn't happen, but that's the thing that prompts your question as well.
Our fine guest, James Santel, thank you for the generosity of your time. Thank you for the morning cannolis every Saturday morning, 9 to 11. And we will broadcast the one-year anniversary Waukesha Christmas Parade Sunday, December 4th on WAUK.
Thanks, Jim.
So you get nothing. You lose.
And yes, losers. They are losers.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to The Devil's Advocates radio show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. We'll get to the phones at 844-967-2789.
If we were to play a Grateful Dead song for our last guest, James Santel, it should have been Friend of the Devil, I feel like.
But a missed opportunity.
I love me some Casey Jones. But real quick, a couple of big events, couple of headliners come to our backyard in support of the Democratic candidates. Dom, Bernie Sanders coming to Wisconsin November 4th and November 5th, turning out the students on campus. We hope Bernie will make stops in Eau Claire, La Crosse, and UW-Madison on November 4th.
Yeah, Bernie, right on, man.
His campaign confirmed to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as part of Next Gen America and the Move On political action events geared towards mobilizing the young voters, guys like me in their early 50s. The independent from Vermont will also be in Osh Vegas, baby, November 5th for a community event. I might find myself in Osh Vegas on November 5th for a community event with Bernie Sanders. It is about energizing our base and increasing voter turnout up and down the ballot, Sanders told the New York Times. He noted he's concerned about the energy level for the young people, the working class people, and I want to see what I can do about that. When asked Wednesday if he'd appear with Bernie Sanders, Democratic Lieutenant Gubernatorial, I guess he's the Lieutenant Governor currently, running for U.S. Senate, Mandela Barnes said he's not sure of the Sanders schedule. Come on, man, Bernie endorsed you. Of course you're going to be at the Bernie rally. But he said, but as I've always said, according to the paper here, Mandela said, I've always said people who are talking about rebuilding the middle class, we're happy to have them here in the state. That's been our plan from the very start, to do the work, to represent people that Ron Johnson has left behind. And one more headliner, Dom, also a Mandela Barnes endorsee, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She will come to campus for a rally October 26th. That's next week. That's coming up pretty soon. And she will come. Apparently, Evers, Josh Call, and Tammy Baldwin appearing on campus at UW-Madison October 26th. We'll keep you posted if we can work a little Devil's Advocate's magic into that as well. And a little bit more, Dom. President Obama, of course, coming to the great state of Wisconsin October 29th, and the Journal Sentinel is reporting that Mandela's campaign is encouraging Obama to stick around and help him campaign and get the voters out here in the great state of Wisconsin. We anticipate broadcasting the Barack Obama rally live across the Civic Media Network. We'll keep you posted on some of these other events. They're moving rapidly. It is the political season, man. This is my favorite.
It is, man.
It's like the playoffs, man. It's my favorite time of year. And the Super Bowl is November 8th.
Yeah, but even during the playoffs, you kind of know when the games are. I mean, these things are dropping every day, and I'm encouraged by it. I'm glad these politicians
are paying attention to the state of Wisconsin. It's like wild card baseball. You don't know if your team's in for three or if one and done. I mean, wild card baseball is much less predictable because they're series. And, you know, so it's unpredictable, like baseball, like the baseball playoffs.
Real quick, 844-967-2789.
Not lots predictable, going on. Like the Packers going to the NFC Championship game and losing each year.
We'll see if they even make it this year. Bernie Sanders tweeted out, as mentioned, Bernie Sanders coming to the state of Wisconsin. But I found this. I want to repeat this before we get back to the phones. Oil prices today, according to Bernie Sanders yesterday, $85.90 a barrel, and gas prices today, $3.85 a gallon. And then he refers to oil prices in April of 2010 at $85.66 a barrel, and gas prices then $2.85 a gallon. And here's what Bernie writes: gas prices are $1 a gallon higher than they should be because of big oil's greed. We need a windfall profits tax. And also yesterday, which we also retweeted at Devil Radio, inflation is not going up in the U.S. because working class got a $1,400 check 19 months ago. Multinational corporations are jacking up prices worldwide. Bernie, always on message, always, always right.
Dominic, more breaking news on plans to try and upturn the apple cart of the Joe Biden, the debt relief. We talked about Coney Barrett rejecting the Wisconsin lawsuit. It is just broken. A federal district judge rejected a lawsuit brought by six Republican-led states challenging President Joe Biden's student debt relief program. U.S. District Judge Henry Edward Autry said Thursday he was dismissing the case because the states had not overcome the procedural threshold known as standing. You got nothing!
You got nothing!
So people might actually get their debt relief starting this Sunday. Thank you, Joe Biden.
844-967-2789. Let's get to it. We have a patient audience. Thank you, callers, for holding. Angie from Monroe, you are next. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Angie.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about apparently on TikTok, a teacher was talking about the fur baby thing, where these furries think the topic came from. And what it is somebody came up with an idea where you get cat litter, and you get a bucket, and you get a, you know, and you get a tent, and the classrooms all get that. And what it is about is it's about lockdown. Say you're locked down, you know, in the classroom for hours and hours, and there's nowhere to go to the bathroom because you can't, like, just go to the bathroom. So that is basically a distraction, is this fur baby story.
Angie, I think some are confused. Mostly it's been another conspiracy theory, QAnon-ish theory of the right that's been propagated on right-wing talk radio. See Vicky McKenna, Dominic's girl. Joe, want to sneak you in today as well. Joe from Madison, welcome. If I can get there. Joe, welcome.
Hey, Joe.
I can't welcome Joe.
Hey.
There she is.
Kind of with the flamethrowers on, you know, Ultra here. I'm really angry about what has happened with Mr. Michaels talking about our Wisconsin electorate.
You're too lazy to be angry.
Right. Mr. Connecticut, you know, who choppers in from a $17 million mansion in out east and offers his opinions on us. You know, not somebody that lives with, but offers his opinions on us. I mean, I think it's really important to realize he describes COVID as creating a class of people who sit on the couch. You know what COVID created? It created a class of people who were terrified and broken by what happened there. All sorts of people lost their jobs. All sorts of businesses had to shutter and close. The economy went down, down, down. We were looking at rates of unemployment at Great Depression rates of 15% up to 26% in certain counties, like I think Manitowoc, which is not that wealthy of a county. And here this guy, you know, Mr. Daddy gives him a business, comes in and offers his 2 cents on what we have. You were the one who said, Dominic, that we're looking at 3.1 unemployment, percent unemployment. That is close to full employment. And apparently, Mr. Business doesn't even know that.
Joe, you make excellent points about the calling Wisconsinites lazy gubernatorial candidate of the MAGA right to Michaels. Thank you to our fine guest. He was James Santel. I had to think for a second. Morning cannolis every Saturday, 9 to 11. Don't forget, we got a couple of fine programs going out tonight. Native Roots Radio, raised in the Wisco, in the Shaw, and right here at the Empowered Caregivers at 7. Keep it locked, Civic Media.